This message is supported by Boehringer Ingelheim, the maker of NexGard Plus, Afoxolaner, Moxidectin, and Pyrantel Chewable Tablets. Next level dog owners will do anything for their pets, especially when it comes to their well-being. And that means giving them next level protection from parasites with NexGard Plus Chews. NexGard Plus Chews provide one and done monthly protection against fleas, ticks, heartworm disease, roundworms, and hookworms. Plus, they're designed to be easy to give in a tasty, beef-flavored soft chew. Use with caution in dogs with a history of seizures or neurologic disorders. Dogs should be tested for existing heartworm infection prior to starting a preventative. Ask your vet about NexGard Plus Chews.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's The Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN Radio 97.5, 92.5 is The Bullpen with the producers here at ESPN Radio, Sean Mapes, RJ Saunders, Josh Behind the Glass, and myself, Brian McDonald. Joining us now, Joel Blank, at Pac-Man Joel on Twitter, one half of the Killer Bees. We're going to get into the Rockets here with Joel because of really of anybody at the station. Why not have the guy that was either on the working for the team or following the team for, what, the last 20, 30 years? So, Joel, first off, great to have you on the show. Appreciate you giving us the time here to come on and talk about what the Rockets did here with this head coaching hire. I'll start with the obvious. Were you satisfied with the answers Ime Udoka gave about what happened in Boston?
Yeah, I really was, guys. I think they got it right. I thought before the entire search started that he was the best guy for the job, and I put him top of my list. Once I heard him in the press conference, I was convinced even more they got the right guy because, you know, he owned it. He owned what happened off the floor. He basically said he still feels even more remorse. He knows what he did was wrong, and he knows that he learned a lesson, and that's what I think everybody wanted to hear. And then he proceeded to go in and tell you exactly what he was going to do that Steven Silas was incapable of doing that was going to be the right guy for a job in which this is the most important offseason in the history of the franchise. And they started it out by getting an A+, by getting the right coach to lead this team going forward.
And Joel, I know we talked about when the job came open about how who they hire was going to say a lot about how the pressure that Raphael Stone was feeling in the building. And did he want a kind of another underling kind of lackey where he can still, you know, step in and practice in film rooms and stuff, or is he actually going to push in and try to get a great coach? So what does the hire of Ime say about Stone's position in the front office?
I'll be honest with you, Sean. I think the more I heard the comments at the press conference, Tillman wasn't supposed to speak, and he spoke. Tillman talked about how he did his due diligence with people in the league. I think this was what I was begging for. I think this was Tillman and Fertitta finally reengaging, basically saying, look, I've let things run amok enough ever since I found out that my team wasn't going to be competing with the Warriors anymore. I disengaged, and then I had to reengage. And instead of shut up and listen, it was shut up and get back in the building and do what was necessary for this franchise. And he came in and basically said, look, I need a guy that is going to be the smartest basketball person in the room. I need a guy that's going to be able to not only teach and guide my young players, but also put an end to all the shenanigans that they've been getting away with for far too long. You know, we always say the truth lies somewhere in the middle. We heard what John Wall had to say. We heard some of the veterans in the league, including one that finished the season on the team, saying this was the most screwed up locker room they had ever been in. And something had to be done. And I think that Tillman was the guy that finally reengaged and said, as much as I'm grooming my son to be the GM someday and he and Rafael are running things on a daily basis, at a certain point, I paid a whole lot of money for this team and I need to do the right thing for this organization to kind of change this culture and reputation. And I think Tillman made the hire more than anybody else because you and I had spoken and I spoke on the show about it. If Rafael Stone hired another puppet so that he could be Geppetto, this team was going off the deep end. But because they hired a guy that was completely the opposite, that under the Popovich kind of teaching technique of coaching, Ime Udoka, you know, learned and he expressed that we're going to play defense. We're not going to. This is a professional level. We're not going to let kids get away with whatever they want to do. That's what you needed to hear, and that was, if, as a Rockets fan, what you wanted for this franchise.
So one third of the process, at least for now, is complete. You get the right coach. You're also going to be looking at the draft and the lottery that will be coming up here shortly. But I wanted to talk to you, Joel, about free agency. You know, Jeff Van Gundy says that he doesn't believe that there's going to be a star that's going to come to Houston and come to the rescue, but does feel like there could be the right veteran guys that may be able to come in and help with this rebuilding process and help with the Rockets. You being the NBA, you know, just aficionado that you are, have there been names that you've thought about or have tried to look up to say that these would be good veteran guys to have around the young core of a Jabari Smith, of a Jalen Green, of an Alperen Şengün that could come in and make a definite impact with this Rockets team?
I think there could be, RJ. I think the biggest thing is that it's got to be right for both parties. I part of what we were talking about to Sean's question, too, was about culture. And one of the things was, no matter who you zeroed in on as coach, they have to want to be in Houston as much as you want them to be your next guy. And the same thing with free agents. Free agents have to want to be here and have to find motivation and find interest that leads them here, as opposed to you wanting them and them saying, well, you can pay me a lot of money, but other than that, I have no reason to want to come to Houston. So I think that, you know, a lot of grandiose names were thrown out, and, you know, people talked about Brook Lopez or Dylan Brooks or, you know, all these different guys at different stages in their career. But the one thing that was pretty consistent about guys that people were looking at was they're coming from winning programs, and no one wants to come from a winning program to a losing program unless they've already been there, done that, and just want to collect a bigger check. And that's not what the Rockets need. You need it to be, you know, a win-win. So you need a guy that wants to come in, is okay with kind of being a big brother, but, you know, has enough skins on the wall that instantaneously has respect, but still has something to prove, as opposed to guys that have won championships that are on the downside of their career that think this is just one big payday, and then it's just vacation every day. They're rolling, they're coasting, they're not putting any work. So it's a really tricky and intricate kind of situation to try and find the right guys for that kind of job. I don't think Dylan Brooks is that guy, because I think you're going to overpay for attitude. And attitude is not going to win you any more games or get you any further in the locker room. It's just going to give you a whole lot more headaches. And when you see a guy that says one thing and then skips the locker room the minute that, you know, things didn't go his way, it's not the kind of leadership you want anyway. So I'm interested to see who they look at that think can make a difference in the locker room, and which guys think that this is the right spot for them. Because, again, it's convincing them of wanting to play in Houston to turn a corner. And then, you know, from the franchise's perspective, it's getting the right guy to provide the leadership and inside guidance that you don't get all the time from coaching staff.
Joel Blank at Pac-Man Joel on Twitter joining us here, one half of the Killer Bees. Joel, which Rockets player? We talked about, RJ mentioned the young core with Jalen Green and Şengün and Jabari Smith. Which Rockets player benefits the most from this coaching hire?
I think it has to be Jalen Green. I think it's actually threefold, though, BMAC. I think that you're looking at three guys that, even with very minimal guidance, have shown that they belong in this league, and that's Jalen, Jabari, and Şengün. But just think about how much further they can still go, and we don't even know how high their ceiling is, because if they get coaching on a daily basis and they get structure and they get some discipline, they can get to a different level in their career. And that's saying something, especially for guys like Green and Şengün, who have already proven so much. So I think those three guys stand to benefit the most, and I think the guy that's going to be in the crosshairs immediately was the guy that was at the press conference. It's Kevin Porter Jr. Kevin Porter Jr., the organization has done an extraordinary job of burying and hiding a lot of all the theatrics and antics that he has pulled since he's become a Rocket, and obviously his track record shows well before he even got to Houston. They made him an offer they didn't have to make for him to, you know, an offer he couldn't refuse. But they put a lot of clauses in it because they knew what they were dealing with in terms of his off the floor and his emotions and certain things that have to get in check. Well, playtime is over, because now you're going to have a coach that's going to be more no-nonsense, that's not going to tolerate that kind of stuff, that's going to basically, you know, have the authority to say, I'll sit your ass down if you're not willing to conform to the rules and the stipulations that I put in this locker room. And so I think that he's got the most to lose, and I think Şengün, Green, and Jabari are the three guys that can gain the most between. It's going to be interesting, too, by the way, to see who Udoka hires as his coaching staff. I don't expect any of the coaches from the Rockets' previous regime to make the carryover, with the exception of maybe the G League coach that they brought in from the Vipers, and maybe John Lucas. I see John Lucas being elevated up in the front office. I see a whole new coaching staff that has that mentality that we've been itching for, which is teach, coach, and don't take any kind of crap. And I think that's going to be the best for the entire team, but particularly those three.
Joel, when you look at Jalen Green, who's the face of the franchise and could very well be a bona fide star in the NBA, what are you expecting from him, you know, next year in his developmental process? And what have you thought about him overall as a player so far since he's been in the league?
I think that, you know what, RJ, I think here's a guy that's been underdeveloped, but part of it is his own doing. I think, you know, I've talked systematically about how bad AAU basketball is for all these guys that make it to the NBA, because they're fed with a silver spoon, they're completely handled with kid gloves, and everyone is afraid to do anything to rock the boat for fear that the player will leave them in their dust and in their wake and you still get to where they're going and you won't get where you need to go. And I think that Jalen Green's been coddled. And Jalen Green had too many James Harden tendencies a year ago. If he missed a shot, he was either not getting back on defense because he was mad he missed it, or he was looking for an official to complain to because he thought he got fouled. And I think that under the Udoka system of playing defense and defense first and learning switches and rotations and the things that they need to do to get better, Jalen Green has the most to gain, and he could take it to another level because shot selection was horrible. All they ran was ISOs. They didn't learn how to play structure on either end of the floor. And I think that he and Jabari and Şengün, when they learn how to play both ends, when they understand what it takes to be a complete basketball player, that's when you'll see the true growth and development of this team overall. Because now you're talking about guys that understand what it means to be a professional, what it means to be a winner. And I said this to Jeremy during the show, and he kind of looked at me at first, but I really believe this. This was the only coach to get this out of these guys, because I think as young as they are, they don't know and remember who Nick Nurse is and what he's done. They're randomly okay with who Frank Vogel was simply because he worked with LeBron James. But when you talk about a guy like Udoka, who took a young, talented Celtics team to the finals, it's easy for these guys to go, oh, I could see myself being, you know, I could see myself being Smart. I could see myself being, you know, the guys that are on it, Brown. I could see Tatum. I can see this in myself, and then I can translate it to, if I listen like they did and do what they did to get better, this guy can take me there. I think that's what both sides will benefit from with the hiring of Udoka.
Joel Blank from the Killer Bees. You can hear him every Monday through Friday here on ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5 alongside Jeremy Branham from 12 to 3. Joel, appreciate the time. Great to have you on to be able to talk about these Rockets topics.
Anytime, guys.
All right, that's Joel Blank again, at Pac-Man Joel on Twitter. Make sure you give him a follow and listen to the Killer Bees every Monday through Friday from 12 to 3. Coming up next here in the bullpen, Sean Mapes, RJ Saunders, Brian McDonald. More Rockets conversation. We'll get into our own thoughts on some of these same questions about the Rockets' future and their hire of Ime Udoka. That's next in the bullpen, ESPN Radio 97.5, 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. This is the bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN Radio 97.5, 92.5. Welcome back in. It's the bullpen. Sean Mapes, RJ Saunders, Brian McDonald, our man Josh behind the glass. And let's carry over some of the Rockets conversation we had with Joel Blank at Pac-Man Joel. Again, make sure you listen to the Killer Bees 12 to 3. He and Jeremy Branham do a great job. Guys, I want to toss around some of the same questions we were talking about with Joel, get your thoughts on it. Were you guys overall satisfied with what we heard with the explanation with what happened in Boston? It kind of sounded like maybe there was a legal case to where he couldn't really expand upon exactly what happened. We probably won't ever find out the answer until there's some book 30 years from now. But were you satisfied with what we heard about the Boston situation?
Yeah, and like you said, what they're at liberty to tell us. Because, I mean, Boston really doesn't want to...
There's probably an NDA signed somewhere.
Yeah, and because that, I think the female employee is still employed with the Boston Celtics. So you can't, like, go into the full details of what happened. So as much as they could say yes, I also think more, even more so than what they say at a press conference, because they can just say whatever at a press conference, is the fact that the NBA basically had cleared him. And
yeah, that was telling to me.
And other teams were looking to interview him as
when
well.
When Tillman said that the NBA was comfortable with it, that was a big answer
because because he was rumored after way back. This seems like 9 million years ago.
Yeah.
But in November when the Brooklyn Nets fired Steve Nash, they wanted to hire Ime Udoka instead of Jacques Vaughn. And the NBA basically was like, we're not letting you do that. Like when they fired Steve Nash, it was the next tweet from Shams, like 5 minutes later, was like, they expect to bring in Ime Udoka. And Adam Silver, I was about to say David Stern, because this is a David Stern move. But Adam Silver stepped in and was like, we're not doing that. And so now that they have basically lifted the hiring freeze on Ime Udoka, I feel pretty good about that.
Yeah, I think he understood, and I think we talked about this last week of just, you know, are those questions going to arise? Are those questions going to come up? How long are they going to come up with Ime Udoka about what happened in Boston? But, you know, listen, he stood up and he took full responsibility and accountability for what he did. But I do also like the fact that he said, listen, new head basketball coach, I also want to, you know, just talk about basketball, what I'm expected to do with this team and the investment that, you know, Tillman Fertitta is putting in me to lead this Rockets organization back to prominence and where they were just a few short years ago and go definitely a step further to where they were in the 90s when they won championships. So definitely a great thing that he was able to stand up and just say, listen, you know what happened? Yes, did happen. And you know, I'm extremely apologetic for it. And, you know, I'll continue answering questions as legally in depth as I can. But, you know, I think the main focus now is supposed to be basketball, and I'm ready to win ball games for this team.
Yeah, I don't think it makes any sense at this point to waste time on wondering answers that we're never going to find out. You know, we're not going to find out exactly. So if the Leafs cleared them, other teams are doing their due diligence and also interested in Ime Udoka, then I think, yeah, you got to be satisfied that it's in the past and you can move on to this point. So I'm going to hit you guys up with one of the questions I asked Joel. Who benefits the most from this? I mean, obviously, Udoka comes from the Greg Popovich system, known as kind of a hard-nosed guy to instill discipline, did that with the young players in Boston, and the Rockets very well known to have lacked discipline over these last couple seasons under Steven Silas. RJ, who benefits the most from this hire?
I understand the chalk answer is a guy like Jalen Green, but I really want to say, well, not really want to say, I am going to say, Jabari Smith Jr. I mean, listen, you have a guy in Steven Silas who openly said, I don't run plays for Jabari Smith. And Jabari had a great second half of the season, getting over that rookie wall and, you know, just played a great amount of games for a stretch to close out the Rockets season. And I do believe that Ime probably saw that, is probably going to pull him off to the side and say, listen, these are the spots that we're going to implement and place you in order to be successful, because I just don't think that Jabari Smith is this 3-and-D guy, or maybe even, you know, you've heard Lance say on and off that, you know, maybe he's a Robert Horry type guy. I think he's a better offensive weapon than Robert Horry is. And I also think that this guy is able to create his own shot off the dribble. He's very hard on himself and wants to be successful in the NBA and show what he can do. And I think Ime's going to see that. He's going to see that hunger. He's going to see that fire. And I feel that, you know, okay, we have Alperen Şengün. We also have Jalen Green. But we do have a guy that's on this team that was drafted with the third overall pick just last year. Let's see what we can do with him as well as we build up this young core and we rebuild. So Jabari Smith, I feel, is going to really be a guy that is going to benefit greatly from this hire of Ime Udoka.
I think Kevin Porter Jr. is the guy to look for, just because at a certain point, you know, it's a little bit of Ime Udoka is going to coach him hard. You know, he's going to really challenge him to grow up.
Either he's going to get in line or he's going to crack.
Exactly. Yeah. It's sink or swim. And right. The thing with that saying is some people don't swim.
No.
And
no,
so
no.
With Kevin Porter Jr., and Joel talked about his contract, it is very team friendly in that it's basically a rolling 1-year guaranteed contract.
Yeah, they
contract.
Can get out of it if they need to.
And so this is really kind of the maybe not last chance in the league for Kevin Porter, but definitely the last chance on the Rockets being viewed as a core piece of the Rockets. And I think that's part of the reason, you know, some people, you know, Joel and RJ didn't even think about having him as the answer, is because yeah. It's like, well, there's three other guys that are way more important than him. But Kevin Porter Jr. doesn't know that.
Yeah.
And you right. Got to.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Don't tell Kevin.
Yeah. And so getting that coaching from Steven Sy- or not from Steven Sy- from Ime Udoka, this is gonna be the moment where it's like, all right, your career can go one or two ways, Kevin. Yeah. Like it can break that. There's plenty of guys that have all the talent in the world, can average 20 and 8, but they don't stick around because of everything else.
Well, this was also something that John Wall talked about on that podcast with Theo Pinson, where he was saying, listen, a couple of those young guys, and he wasn't naming any names, but you would have to assume Jalen Green, Kevin Porter Jr., that, listen, if you guys were on other teams where, you know, front offices take things a lot more serious and you have a coach that is, you know, no BS, you guys wouldn't, I don't know too much about, like, Jalen Green. I don't know if he wouldn't be in the league, but when you look at a guy like Kevin Porter Jr., like, either you would have been traded by now, or you would probably be playing overseas, or you would be on somebody's bench. You wouldn't be a starting guy where everything's like, oh, it's okay, Kevin, you can continue doing these things that you're doing and you can still play. There's no repercussions. So I think now with having Ime, like Sean said, it's like, listen, your career can definitely go one of two ways here. I know what Silas, you know, let you get away with, and I understand what happened in Cleveland, and you thought that you were dealt a bad hand, so they trade you over here to Houston. You said Houston has saved your life in a way. Your NBA life in a way, but now listen, it's gonna either have to be my way or we're gonna have to start looking for packages for you. And I don't know if there's gonna be too many teams that are gonna be able to look at you knowing the things that they may know and say, we're gonna continue letting him get away with the things that he is.
I mean, it does feel like for a lot of these guys, this will be the first time in their career that they've received, like, you know, discipline coaching, hard coaching. It'll be a whole new world for them.
Just gonna say, I would love to have like the mic'd up or like the Hard Knocks, but whatever they cut out of Hard Knocks, after the first two practices with Udoka in charge, and they're like, wait, what? He's gonna yell at us? Like, what? He's gonna get in my face about when I dribble up the court and just don't pass for an entire
culture
possession?
Shock there.
I think it's
a good thing. So, I mean, with this hire, we got a couple minutes left here and we're gonna get into the Astros next segment. But Sean, do you think this hire, I mean, I think it's universally been universally liked as far as at least what Ime Udoka is as a basketball coach. I know some people will not get over the Boston thing. But just as a basketball coach, do you think this speeds up their timeline to be a competitive team? We talked about last week, you know, before we knew who the coach was, with Jalen Green saying we're going to make the playoffs. Is this a coaching hire of the caliber that would speed up the timeline to you at all?
Absolutely. I mean, this team was the worst team in the league back-to-back years, and this year was the second worst team in the league. So there's nowhere to go but up. And and you're going to have one of the best coaches on your sideline. So, yeah, I absolutely think now. I don't think they're going to make the playoffs. Like, let's be for real right now, Jalen. But I do think that this great. I mean, this goes from like this rebuild was going to be like kind of, it was looking pretty bleak, to like now you're like, okay, now we're kind of cooking. Like if a couple of these guys, just one or two of them, can respond well to Ime's coach, Ime Udoka's coaching, and you mix that in with whoever they're going to get in the draft this year, it's like, oh. All right. This is going to be a pretty good core going forward.
Yeah, Sean just mentioned it, and I think that's why I asked it to Joel the way that I did. It one third of this is completed right now. You got the coach, but now you're going to have to look, you know, in free agency and get the right guys. I understand that James Harden is, you know, the home run swing that has been reported that, you know, may come back to the Houston Rockets. Jaylen Brown has now been a guy where people are thinking, oh, could there be a trade in place to where the Rockets, you know, swing for the fences on Jalen Brown? So there's definitely a lot more to go. This definitely helps. But I'm definitely interested to see what the Rockets decide to do in free agency. I mean, you know, you had Ime Udoka talk about, we like what Şengün does. We also want to bring in other types of centers, you know, on this roster. You also want to add in shooting. So there's going to be that, but then there's also going to be, are we getting the number one pick? Is Victor Wembanyama
coming? It feels like everything kind of hinges upon
that. Is Victor Wembanyama going to be a Rocket?
Like, if you get that pick, then I think everything else seems to kind of fall in place, and you're dealing with an abundance. If you don't get that pick, then there are a few more questions to answer.
And it is funny, the biggest success they can have is absolutely
It's not in their control whatsoever.
It's like they can do literally nothing to improve on getting Victor.
Just hope a frozen envelope goes their way.
Yeah.
All right, we got to get out of here and talk about the Astros here in the next segment. Despite their back-to-back losses to the Phillies in the World Series rematch, the Astros are guaranteed at worst a .500 record for April. Is that satisfy you given the injured star still missing time? We'll discuss that next on the bullpen. Brian McDonald, Sean Mapes, and RJ Saunders will be back in 3 minutes on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
We're taking a break.
Okay. That's cool.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Welcome back in, Houston, ESPN Radio 97.5, 92.5. Sean Mapes, RJ Saunders, Brian McDonald here on the Bullpen, the producers of ESPN Radio. And I know we promised Astros going into the break. Well, I promised Astros going into the break. I don't want to put anything on Sean and RJ, but I think there's still some meat on the bones here with the Rockets. So we're going to talk a little more Rockets here and try to get in some Astros before the segment's over, but we'll see how it goes. So we ended the last segment talking about the ping pong balls and the lottery and how that kind of basically was the entire Rockets offseason. Like, luck if you get those ping pong balls bouncing your way. So one of the thoughts I had, let's say the Rockets do win the lottery and they pick up Victor.
Awesome.
Now I know. Yeah. First off, amazing. Yeah.
A+. Whatever it is. Good.
But I think one of the conversations people have been having about the Rockets is like, okay, which of the core players are still here when the rebuild continues? Like, which players maybe do you move on? And not that these guys are all the same player, even though they're all bigs, but RJ, how do you think Victor, Şengün, and Jabari, all being bigs, fit together if those three come together, if they get the ping pong balls bouncing their way?
In this era of positionless basketball, I feel that it can work. I think that you could play Victor Wembanyama, who's this unicorn-type guy. I look at him almost as what Kristaps was when Kristaps first came into the league. I think that you could use him as a stretch four and a guy that can create his own shot. I also think that you have a guy in Jabari Smith Jr., who I talked about ad nauseum in the last segment, who can create his own shot as well and is also a very willing defender. So I don't know who would be on the chopping block, because I feel you could make it work with these guys.
I mean, you can also just – you can play three bigs.
Like, yeah, you can play three bigs.
One guy can just
come
off the bench and play 30 minutes off the bench in a playoff game.
Like, absolutely.
Like, you could just do that. You don't have – there's no law that you can only have two good bigs.
Yeah. Şengün's kind of your post player. Victor and obviously Jabari can shoot threes and space on the floor. So it feels like it could work, but it's just one of those things, like, if there is a piece that would move, like – or unless you're completely convinced that it absolutely would work, is there a piece that you would move?
I mean, in the regular season doesn't really matter. And then even in the playoffs, the type of player that his role gets minimized in the play. And you saw it with Sabonis in this first round, actually, he did play pretty well in game six, is the post player that doesn't give you a lot on defense. Well, they have two rim protectors right next to him. So when it 3-4 years down the road, when it actually matters in these playoff series that we hope the Rockets are in, You can just have a front line of Wembanyama and Jabari Smith, and have Sabonis come off the bench. You can have Şengün come off the bench, and he can be that bench offense that you need in these second units, where the offense or the defensive responsibility for these guys is lesser in the minutes, because they're a lot of times going to be matching up with the minutes that the star on the other team sits. So you're less worried about the defensive flaws in his game there. So you can start all three of them, really.
I think it kind of fits together when you had Harden teaming with Westbrook, Harden teaming with Paul, where I think that the benefit and the strength of that is you always had a ball-handling playmaker on the court at all times. Yeah. You could space out their minutes to where one of them is always on the court, and you're not taking you're not going into a rotation where you have minutes without that type of player on the court. So maybe it sounds like what you guys are saying, it's kind of the same thing there, where you can move their minutes around, where one, you're not too worried about having three defensive liabilities on the court, but also where you can kind of spread those minutes out to not maybe have two guys doing the exact same thing on the court at the same
time. Essentially, you can, yes, like how teams a lot of times will stagger on offense, you could stagger on defense, where every time Şengün's out there, he's playing next to Jabari or Victor, where he always has – you're never going – the best rim protector on the floor right now is Alperen Sengun.
Yeah, that's not a great situation to be in.
He's also going to play a lot of minutes with Tari Eason, too. So they have some defensive pieces in that front court. Usman Garuba, who is first and last time he'll ever be mentioned on the show, but Usman Garuba.
Also guaranteed that the team will be going to the playoffs after Jalen Green
said really?
It. He actually did.
Usman Garuba.
Usman Garuba.
You cannot guarantee the playoffs.
Look, it is one thing if Jalen Green says it, because he's going to have
a say in it.
Yeah, he's going to have a say in it.
Yeah. But Usman, you're just driving the bus.
You can't.
Here's another.
I know the ooze is loose.
That's like David Carr like flashing his Super Bowl ring and trying to take credit for that.
It's
like,
worse than
bro,
that.
You're a backup.
It's like if David Carr before the season guaranteed they're going to win the Super Bowl.
You're right.
My other big question is though for the Houston Rockets, when we talk about a young core, we talk about is there somebody who'd be willing to give up? Is there any player in the league, not named Jaylen Brown, who you could say I'm willing to give up assets in order to become, a team that has that potential superstar player on my team that's going to be the unquestioned leader on the team? Because if you get a guy like Damian Lillard or if you get a guy like James Harden, you're basically saying we have, three, maybe four years?
Yeah, I don't like what that does to your window.
With Dame.
I'm saying with James, you're looking at about, two with Dame, you're looking at about
34 when the season starts.
Yeah, so I mean,
there's no reason to trade any of the 21-year-olds for a 35-year-old.
Yeah. If for some reason they're willing to do that for some of the Brooklyn picks, I could have that conversation.
Yeah,
not being obviously Victor, but
yeah, the assets you would get off are the picks and maybe one of these guys to just move up a little bit to get the next 25-year-old that becomes available.
Yeah.
Look for your Shea Gildas-Alexander to compare them to the Thunder, where the Thunder have a lot of young guys. They have Jalen Williams. They have Josh Giddey. And then but they have all these young guys. And then they have Shea, who's a little bit older. He's still a young player, but he is like 3 or 4 years older than most of those guys. So that's the way to do it. They don't have the Oklahoma City Thunder didn't go in and we're gonna go out and we're gonna get us Bradley Beal and that's take it. It's like
it just feels like you're volunteering to be put into a situation where your window's over in a couple of years.
By the time the young players are so in the immediate, the young players aren't ready to compete in the playoffs.
Right.
In the long term, the old player that you get is not ready to
compete.
Yeah,
he'll be
when
past
all the young
that
guys
point.
Are ready.
Yeah,
so
it doesn't
you're
make
just
a lot
volunteering
of sense.
That issue for it, where you really can. Just,
it wouldn't maximize like you well, obviously the Astros have been able to maximize their window.
Yes.
by putting themselves obviously in a situation not overpaying and overextending themselves. They put them in a situation where that window is open for a long time. Doing what we've talked about would not keep the Rockets' window open for as long as it could be.
When all your best players are 23 and under, it's not the worst thing in the world to be the 10 seed.
Exactly.
Being stuck in the 10 seed, building a veteran squad to get to the 10 seed, that's bad. But when all your guys can still barely drink, it's not a problem. You just let it roll, and then when you actually have to make the decisions you make, if you don't volunteer to make those decisions quite yet.
No, I mean, I'm looking at guys, he brings up Bradley Beal. There's Damian Lillard. There's Jalen Brown. There's James Harden.
Jalen Brown's the only one that I would even
When you talk about other young guys who have been talked about in potential maybe moves or trades, you're thinking of John Collins, OG Anunoby, Pascal Siakam. With those guys, are they moving the needle to where you're saying – we're going from here, and now we're here.
Not for me. I think I'm kind of in, and Sean hit on this, there's nothing wrong with being the 10 seed with a bunch of guys who can't drink yet. I almost want to see this core do it for a couple years to see if they're where they're at. If they get to a point where we're looking at, let's say 3 years from now, we're looking at their ceiling right now is a 6 seed, then you make the move. Right now, I'm not making the
move. They haven't had a real coach. They haven't even played on a real basketball team,
really.
They haven't had a point guard. They haven't had a real coach.
Yeah.
Let's at least see these guys let's package Tari Eason and someone else to try to get, it's like, no, Pascal Siakam, what is What's Pascal Siakam going to do for this team? Like, what are we talking? His team was on the 10th seed.
Yeah.
They were a team of veterans. They're the 10th seed.
Yeah, where are they right now? Are they right now? Exactly. All right, we got one more segment here on the bullpen. Sean Mapes, RJ Saunders, Brian McDonald. We got to get into our worst people in sports this week, which a few of them might be fellow co-workers here. We heard Will Anderson be giddy the fact that he now had co-workers. Well, we're going to have to call out some of our co-workers, but we also will talk about the things we love from sports. And our man Josh behind the glass has a question for us as well. We'll try to get to all that and more. Last segment of the bullpen on ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. You're back inside the bullpen with the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
All right, we got to cut RJ off. He's making way too many excuses for the thing he loved here. Hopefully we'll have time to get into that. It's the bullpen, ESPN Radio, 97.5, 92.5. Hopefully you were watching us over on Twitch. You heard that conversation. I think RJ might have lost his mind on this one. RJ Saunders, Sean Mapes, Brian McDonald, our man Josh behind the glass. And our man Josh behind the glass, before we get into our worst people in sports this week and what we love from sports this week, has a question for us. What's up, Josh?
So really quickly, I just want to know if the ping pong balls fall the right way in favor of the Houston Rockets, which team would you be more excited to going into next season, the Rockets or the Texans?
I think the Texans would be more prepared to win now.
To be competitive.
Yeah, to be competitive now.
But I think the upside long-term future with what the core we talked about, Jabari and Jalen and Shingun and Victor, if the ping pong balls fall your way, I think their upside might be I'm not even going to say might be. I would say their upside would be higher. That's an exciting core, but I think the immediate success will probably be quicker with the Texans.
Yeah, it is a very good question because they're, in a lot of ways, even right now before the hypothetical Victor pick, they're in a very similar spot as far as where the roster is. But then when you throw Victor on top of it, the Texans don't have anyone that is that.
Right, like, they don't have
A plus level prospect on their team. Even though we can like Will Anderson, we can like CJ Stroud.
I think Victor's a higher quality prospect for the NBA than Will is for the NFL.
That will tip me a little bit into the scale, but what you said about being competitive, like next year the Rockets will not be as competitive as the Texans are. No.
Yeah, so for me it's definitely the Houston Texans. I think Victor is definitely going to be a promising prospect. As far as pundits go, they say it's going to take a couple years for him to really develop. Into an NBA player.
Yeah.
He weighs 100 pounds soaking wet. So I think in a division that's winnable in the AFC South and the picks that you've gotten, and as well as the hype around D'Amico Ryans, I think right now you're more excited about seeing the Texans and the Rockets.
All right, let's get into our worst people in sports this week. And this week, several of these people, actually all three of the people are inside the city of Houston, two of them. Are inside this very building that we're in right now. My worst person in sports this week, we have some audio to go along with this. It's from the draft show on Thursday night that John Granato and Jeremy Branham hosted. The latter had one of the hottest takes I've ever heard, and I could not disagree with it more.
I applaud bravado. I applaud courage. Do I like the trade? No. Do I think C.J. Stroud was the second-best quarterback? No. Do I applaud them for being courageous and making this a relevant NFL organization? 100% yes, absolutely. I hope they're right and I'm wrong. They should be the ones that are right, and I should be the one that is wrong. So if they're right, we'll look back at this in 5 years and say, wow, what a job by Caserio. But if this fails, this might be the worst day in Houston, Texas history, and this will live in infamy.
No, don't say this.
It's possible.
Pearl Harbor.
It's in play.
I love Paul with the Pearl Harbor reference there at the end. But come on, Jeremy. There is no scenario where this becomes the worst day in franchise history. I mean, we don't have enough time to run down all the worst days in franchise history. We could talk about blowing the 24-0 lead at Kansas City. We could talk about Jacoby Jones fumbling the punt in Baltimore in that 2011 playoff game. We could talk about going way back, the Texans blowing a second-round pick by taking Tony Hollings in the second round and for a guy that only had like 190 80 career rushing yards. They blew a second-round pick on him. We could talk about Brock freaking Osweiler, not only his terrible play on the field in 2016, but then having to give away a second-round pick to just get rid of him. To lose a second-round pick to get rid of a player is just absolutely unbelievable. But there's so many – I mean, obviously the whole Deshaun Watson saga with what happened there, the requesting a trade and the 25 women that came forward accusing him of some very terrible things. So, no, there's no scenario for me where this is the worst moment in franchise history.
No, absolutely not. I mean, even because he does
even
say,
if they fail.
Yeah, he does say if this doesn't work. He didn't say it was the worst
right.
day. He said if it doesn't work out, this could be the worst day. Even then,
very hard. You're not having to trade one of these guys along with a second round pick just to get rid
of
him. Because
they would have to have like the worst record in the league. Where yeah. They're literally giving away the number.
There's just absolutely no chance. RJ, who is your worst person in sports this week?
When I think of dynasties in sports, there are a lot of teams that I think about. However, our man, and he's my guy, I love him, Joe George, had another team that you should throw in the pot.
Like, the Astros didn't care about the fans when they lost three straight years of 100 games, when they wouldn't call up George Springer. Like, but they had their plan. Luno knew what he was doing, and he executed it perfectly. And the Astros have gone through three GMs, two managers, and of the most successful dynasty in the history of sports, in my opinion, because of that.
Listen, the Celtics.
Lakers fan, you have the floor.
The Celtics, the Lakers, the Cowboys, the Warriors.
UCLA
the Packers,
basketball.
You have
Alabama football.
Spurs. You have a lot of teams.
Anyone who's won three titles?
Patriots, the Yankees.
The Astros era has been one of the, you know, best eras so far in sports over the last, six years?
Well, yeah, since the turn of the century.
So, I mean, has been one of the more successful eras. You know, they haven't done it, you know, done it where they've gone back-to-back, something Dusty Baker said he would like to do.
That's a bold take.
They would like to, if they've won one, let's go for the second. You also have, you know, the fact that the Astros have gone to several, you know, conference championship games. They've now gone to the World Series a few years in a row. So I look at it as an era. But until you win multiple championships, I can't call you a dynasty yet. And especially,
they have to win three for you to call them a dynasty?
Yeah.
See, I would still.
I'm at the 2-3 range. Yeah.
I would still call him a dynasty at this point. And I love Joe. And Joe admitted after the fact when he had time to think about it, like, maybe that was an incorrect take to have. Because we just named off, I think, 11 franchises that have had a more dynastic run than the Astros have over the last 6 years. But, yeah, certainly not the most successful dynasty in sports history. Sean, who was your worst person of
My worst person of the week is content creator Ryan Trahan. Anyway, he announced Tank Dell with the 69th pick in the 2023 NFL draft. Here's what it sounded like.
Howdy!
All right, cut him off. I don't want to hear any more out of that guy. Worst person of the week, just for that alone. It was a good pick by Ryan. Good job with picking Tank Dell. I think that they should have the celebrity.
Oh, you think they gave him the pick?
I think they should. That should be a rule change in the NFL draft. We don't have time for it, but to have the celebrity actually pick.
There are way more celebrities in the city.
God, I can't imagine what Drew Pearson's picking every year. That guy's on the NFL draft every single year.
Yeah, so Ryan Trahan, I don't know. But you're the worst.
We should have had Megan Thee Stallion go out there. That's who I think we should have gone on the stage.
If you were thinking social media influencer, you have one in your backyard by the name of Gideon.
If we're going to put a content creator, quote unquote, on the stage, shouldn't it be someone we've heard of? No. Has anyone heard of this dude?
No.
Josh?
No. That's what I'm saying. No? Gideon's from the city of Houston. If you wanted to go further than that, I mean, what? If you wanted to go Austin, Texas, but I mean, you know, they have Dallas, but Austin, Texas, you could have got RDC World. And could have got Mark Phillips and the boys to announce the pick if you wanted to do that as well. So I mean, you had options. This guy, I don't even know.
12.3 million subscribers on YouTube.
What?
Yeah.
Okay,
it's a different world.
Oh, so we're living.
Okay, so there's four people here that haven't heard of him, but a whole lot of people have. Yeah. Okay, so maybe. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I'm just an old. All right, let's. Now that we're done with the anger sharks, let's swim over to the Sea of Tranquility. Easy for me to say and talk about the things we love quickly. My thing that I loved. Tom Brady and I have something in common. No, I have not won 7 Super Bowls, but like Tom Brady, I am done dating supermodels. That's the report from Radar Online.
Well, and for the rest of us.
I know, yeah. Just
Josh and I, we're going to clean up on this.
Yeah, exactly. It's just like, you know, Tom and I are past that point in our life. We've dated the supermodels. We've had our fun, but we're past that point. So congratulations to Tom for being done with dating supermodels. RJ, what'd you love from sports this week?
So I won't use the sound because we are short on time. However, I did love Giannis's response to whether or not his season was a failure. Look, this guy only played 11 minutes in game one. He missed games 2 and 3 with an injury. So it wasn't like this guy was able to play the full series. So it was a disappointment. But there are steps to success. And, you know, when he brings up Jordan, was it, you know, he played 15 years, but he won 6 titles. Were the other 9 a failure? No, we still look at him as the greatest player of all time. You know, so I do believe in any profession. There are steps to success. There are disappointments. But in the words of the greatest player of all time, second greatest player of all time, I should say,
what?
Kobe Bryant.
No. Okay.
Kobe Bryant. You know, listen, failure is only failure. If you fail on Monday, if you decide to fail on Tuesday, that's the failure. But you're able to learn from everything. So
I feel like I'm sitting next to a motivational poster right now. Like, hang in there. There's going to be a cat hanging from a prayer.
That's what we're in elementary school.
The Bucks won the one game that they won against the Miami Heat was the game that Giannis didn't play. So they did lose all the games he played in.
Hot take: Bucks are better without Giannis. 7-1-3. What's your worst person or your favorite thing?
My favorite thing from the sports weekend was Kyrie Irving showing up to the Lakers game 6, fueling all the free agency rumors. And in that game with Kyrie Irving sitting courtside, not only did they win by 40, but D'Angelo Russell had the only game that he's ever done. He's ever shot over 50% in the postseason. He scored a career high 31 points in the playoffs, went 5 from 9 from 3 with his replacement sitting side.
You think he's trying to make the case?
100%.
Kyrie's not a Laker next year.
Please don't get rid of me for Kyrie.
D'Angelo Russell stepping up his game, playing for his job, is the best thing from the sports weekend.
All right, that'll do it for the bullpen, for Sean Mapes, for RJ Saunders, for our man Josh behind the glass. Thank you for listening to the bullpen. We'll be back next week, same time, same channel, ESPN 97.5 from 10 a.m. to Sunday. Until next week, Houston, it's been a great show, a lot of fun. We'll see you next week.
Loaded, ready, rule.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together, because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.